David Hawkins is editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call and author of the Hawkins Here blog and column. He has Congress covered in so many positions at CQ, which he's done since 1995. So, David Hawkins, I couldn't wait to talk to you. I'm so glad you're here. CQ, of course, is the best coverage of the United States Congress that we have, and I so appreciate your making this time for us. Why do you do it? I mean, you know, what is it that makes you keep coming back?
I have friends who listen.
That's a great reason. David Hawkins, how exactly did Donald Trump win again?
Oh, that. I think it was a couple of things. It was a, I don't view this as a change election. I view this as a Trump election. You know, the exit polls offer all kinds of interesting stuff, not the least of which was that 63% of the electorate viewed Trump as temperamentally unfit and unqualified to be president, and one out of every five of those people voted for him anyway. I also note, it was a turnout election. Trump got 2 million fewer votes than John McCain did. He got 1 million fewer votes than Mitt Romney did. But Hillary Clinton got, I think, 7 million fewer votes than Barack Obama did in 2012. So clearly the Democrats didn't get their people out. And so for a combination of all those reasons, Donald Trump turned some parts of the country red that had been blue. There are actually something like 225 counties nationwide, including a bunch in New York State and in Wisconsin and in Iowa and in sort of the parts of Ohio that stretch down sort of the Rust Belt, 225 counties nationwide that were double Obama counties that voted for Donald Trump.
Well, you forgot to mention when you were talking about who got how many votes that Hillary Clinton did get more votes than Trump, right?
Absolutely true. As you and I are speaking, we don't have the final count, but it looks like it's going to be maybe close to 1 million more votes. Clearly, I mean, you know, more than a rounding error. It looks like it'll be, in the end, 48% Clinton, 47% Trump. And Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and various write-ins, the rest. But so, it's not the system we have. It's not what Donald Trump would have referred to as the rigged system, which he now describes as genius, is the Electoral College.
Yeah.
And a switch of 110,000 votes is, by my back-of-the-envelope calculation, a switch of 110,000 votes in three states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin and Michigan, which I think is still not technically called, would have made her the president.
So there's a huge number of people who've been writing me letters about how the and it's absurd, of course, but I thought I'd entertain us with it, how the Electoral College could pull up their pants and vote for somebody other than Donald Trump. That ain't going to happen.
It's actually against the law in many states. There are actually penalties in many of the states for so-called faithless electors, people who do not vote as the popular vote in their state dictates. So the Electoral College is not going to rescue those who feel like the presidential election needs rescuing, and the Electoral College is not going to change anytime soon. The Electoral College works to the benefit of the small states. It works to the benefit, therefore, of the Republicans who now control the country. It would take a constitutional amendment to change the Electoral College. That means three-quarters of the states would have to go along. And the smaller states get, obviously, a disproportionate power under the Electoral College.
Sure.
Because, you know, if you live in Vermont, that means there's essentially one electoral vote for every 200,000 or 300,000 people. Versus if you live in California, it's one electoral vote for every, you know, almost million people.
So, David Hawkins, I want to switch the subject now to something that's fascinating. The cabinet.
If the election were not.
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. I taught political science for 40 years, and I could see the glaze in people's eyes as you explain all of this. But everybody knows about Rudy Giuliani. So what can you tell us?
Everybody does know about Rudy Giuliani. I can tell you that if, as we're talking here, it looks like he is certainly in the hunt to be named the Secretary of State. The word is that it is either Giuliani or a guy named John Bolton, and both of them would face difficulties getting through the Senate. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, has served notice that he is prepared to mount significant opposition against both Rudy Giuliani or John Bolton, remembering that the Democrats only have, the Democrats have 48, the Republicans have 52. So it would take, if the first battle of Congress next year is going to be fights over cabinet nominations, even before we get to the fight over the Supreme Court that we know will be coming, then the assumption has always been, oh, the cabinet members will be fine because they got 52 Republican votes and a bunch of Democrats aren't going to filibuster cabinet people. Well, that could be different if it's Rudy Giuliani at the State Department. He rubs a lot of people, not just people who are familiar with his tenure as the mayor of New York. He rubs a lot of Republicans and Democrats the wrong way, too bombastic, too histrionic, too sort of too much channeling Trump too much, especially in the last 6 months.
Trump has been relying on his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and we see today, as we speak, that there was a scrubbing of the forces of Chris Christie, who had been the head of the transition team, and who's not only out, but all of his followers are out of the system. What happened there?
Well, we don't know for sure.
Damned if I know.
but there's some pretty good conjecture there, which is as you know, Jared Kushner and Chris Christie have a very bad history that has to do with when before Chris Christie was the governor of New Jersey, he was the United States Attorney, the chief federal prosecutor in New Jersey, and actually put Jared Kushner's father in prison for a sordid, S-O-R-D-I-D, witness intimidation case that I would recommend anybody with access to Google should go look up because it's a heck of a good story. But Kushner has, you don't even need a long memory, you just need a memory to see that Chris Christie is not one of the good guys in his family's history. And so Kushner has the power to make this happen. And Trump values, it seems, from everything we know about Trump's business career and his presidential campaign, extremely high priority on loyalty and holding people close. Outsiders are suspect. Interlopers are suspect. And so Kushner has the power to say to his father-in-law, it would seem, that that Christie and Christie's minions, who include, I would also argue, the most prominent person sort of purged here, a very well-respected former congressman, Mike Rogers from Michigan, who was the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who was seen as sort of the obvious choice to run to be the director of national intelligence or head of the CIA, was running Trump's national security transition and has been pushed out. So clearly a sign. I mean, Trump is pushing back on this as we speak very hard, saying we are not in organizational meltdown. We are organized, but all the outward signs coming out of Trump Tower are that they are having a very rocky first week trying to figure out how to stand up the government.
We'll continue our fascinating conversation, David Hawkins, in the next episode. And so everybody stand by for tomorrow.